ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
So, the song we're going to discuss today is a very important song. It tells us so many different ways in which we can make progress in devotional service. How we can increase our love of God. This is the goal of life. Prema Pumartho Maha. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that the real goal of life is to increase our love for Krishna. The Vedic culture teaches principally four subject matters. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, which means ordinary religious activities, that is Dharma. Then Artha is economic development. Kama means enjoyment of the senses. And Moksha means liberation. So Vedic culture is set up around these four principles. That is the real meaning of human civilization. Human civilization doesn't mean simply to build more and more factories and machines. But it means organization in which people can fulfill their material necessities, in as simple a manner as possible, so that they can concentrate on the ultimate goal of life. So, ordinarily, people are interested in dharma, artha, kama, moksha. It means ordinary religious rituals, acquisition of money, enjoyment of the senses, and ultimately liberation from material existence. No, I mentioned before. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended that far more important than dharma, artha, kama, moksha is prema, love of God. Prema, umartho, maha. The highest or the most important thing in life is to attain love of God. So love of God is based on surrender to it. Surrender means accepting that God is our master and developing a loving relationship based on service to Him. That is called sharanagati or the way of surrender. So that is being described in these songs by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in this song, he tells all different things which are very favorable so that we can make progress in our devotional life. So the first thing he says is, Shuddha Bhakata Charana Renu Bhajana Anukul. He says that dust from the lotus feet of pure devotees is very conducive or favorable for making progress in devotional service. The idea is that everyone should try to get association of pure devotees so that they can also become a pure devotee. This is the goal of the members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to become pure devotees of Krishna. Pure means with no material desires. Everyone has got so many personal, selfish desires. How I shall be happy. How I can exploit others and improve my own personal position. Or sometimes that selfishness is extended. Extended means expanded. And so we think in terms of my family, my society, my country. But it is still with me at the center. Just like, why am I so interested in my family? There are so many people in the world, why should I be so much interested in my own family? Because it has a relationship with me. Therefore, ultimately, desiring to do good to my family members is based on my own personal interest. But a pure devotee of Krishna has no personal desire. He only desires to see how Krishna will be satisfied. And by satisfying Krishna, he actually becomes the best friend of everybody. He actually becomes the friend of everybody. Because he doesn't think that these people, I'm working for these people, for the interest of these people, against the interest of other people. But he sees everyone is my friend. The whole world is my family because everyone is related to me through the relationship with God. Vasundhaiva kutumbakam means seeing the whole world as your family. Sometimes people say that members of the Hare Krishna movement give up the affection for their family members. But actually they are expanding their family to the whole world. Devotee of Krishna is concerned not only with a small family but a very big family. And not only human beings, but all living beings. So in this way, a pure devotee of Krishna is the best friend of all living beings. So it is this quality which the Krishna Conscious Movement is promoting in human society. We are promoting purity. Our goal is to become pure. Sometimes people say, why don't you be like a man? They put a lot of stress on having physical strength. Or becoming a man means the ability to drink half a liter of vodka without falling under the table. So some people think this is a very good quality, if you can do this. Or among women, they're thinking how to be the ideal woman. That means if you can put a lot of red lipstick and look very attractive, then you're considered to be a very first-class woman. 1 inch thick lipstick. 1 centimeter thick lipstick. This is considered to be a very good quality. But in Krishna conscious movement, we are not thinking simply how to make the body very strong or very beautiful. We are not very much concerned with these things. Because, after all, what is the value of this bodily strength? Because however strong you are, there'll always be someone stronger than you. And even if you win the Olympic weightlifting championship gold medal, there are still, if you bring one baby elephant, he'll be stronger than you. You don't even have to bring a full-grown elephant, just bring any baby elephant. And however strong your body may be, still you have to die. Or however beautiful a young woman may be, she also has to grow old and die. Today a young woman may be very beautiful. When she walks down the road, all the young men collapse. But in 40 years' time, no one will even look at her. So this bodily strength or bodily beauty, it's very temporary. And it doesn't satisfy the soul. It simply breeds frustration. But if you become a pure devotee of Krishna, then you become completely satisfied. So this purity is very much needed in human society. It is needed that some people develop godly qualities. Everyone is very interested how to make their body strong and healthy and beautiful. Or some people are very interested how to become a very big intellectual. Most people are very interested how to get money. Some people, especially businessmen, they're very eager for money. From the moment they get up in the morning till the moment they sleep, all they're thinking about is money. Different plans how to make money. Even when they're brushing their teeth, they're thinking, well, if I invest money here, and maybe then I could make profit here, and then I'll invest again there. Even when they're eating, even when they're passing stool, they're thinking, maybe I could collect my stool and sell it for fertilizer. Even when they're sleeping, actually usually they don't sleep, because in the middle of the night they wake up and they have some plan how to make money. Then they get ulcers from over-anxiety and heart problems. And all the money they save, they have to spend it on open heart surgery. So everyone is interested in something temporary. Balasyava kriya sakta. In childhood, everyone is simply attached to playing sports. Tarunyasyava tarunyasakta. And in youth, young boys are simply attached to young girls. Vridha kalat chintamagna. In old age, everyone is simply in anxiety. Pare brahmani kaipi nasakta, as Shankaracharya says. But no one is thinking, what is the ultimate truth? What is the meaning of life? So Krishna conscious movement is meant for considering what is the ultimate goal of life. Who is God? What is our relationship with Him? How to develop our relationship with Him? Actually, this is a very high motive. Therefore, people sometimes misunderstand this Krishna consciousness. Because they think that religion should be simply something, you pray to God, God give me this, give me that. When we talk about surrender to God, they cannot understand what we are talking about. They think, well, God is someone who lives in the church, and you go to Him and pray for different things. Give me this, give me that. So God, His business is in the church. You should keep Him in the church. And when you need some money, go and see Him. But this whole idea of dedicating your life to God, this is something very unusual. That is for saints. Those are people who used to live a long time ago. You read about them in books. So God, His place is in the church, and saints, their place is in a book. But this whole idea of dedicating your life to God, we don't want this. Now in the modern age, we need economic development. This is what people think. So when they see Hare Krishna people dedicating their life to God, they think that they should go to the insane asylum. To the lunatic asylum. Mental hospital. But actually this dedication to life, dedication to God, that is the essence of all religions. Just like people, they like to quote Jesus Christ, Lord Jesus Christ. But what was He doing? He was teaching love God. And the formal religionists of that day, they didn't like it. And they persecuted Jesus Christ. So in the modern age, the devotees of Krishna, they're teaching the same thing. Love God. Don't just follow ritualistic religion. We are teaching become pure. But some people don't like it. What can we do? Our goal is to become pure devotees of Krishna. We cannot give that up. We know also that if people could just appreciate this, what great benefit this Krishna consciousness movement can give to society. In modern society, you have technological experts, you have financial experts, you have physical experts who are very strong-bodied, you have intellectual experts. But where are these spiritual experts? All classes of people are needed to make society balanced. Human society without spiritual guidance is only animal society. Even if you have, same thing, even if you have big, big buildings, if you simply live in the building, then what is it different from the bird living in its nest? If you have no higher goal of life, then you're not, your consciousness is not more developed than the animal. So Krishna conscious movement is meant for giving real spiritual values to society. Real spiritual values means we should know who God is and how to live according to the directions of God. So there should be some people in human society who live their life like this. There should be some people in human society to give this spiritual guidance. We can't expect that everybody will become fully absorbed in this. But at least some people should be there to give spiritual direction to human society. Some people should study this spiritual science very deeply. Of course, simply to study spiritual knowledge, that is not enough. One has to act on the spiritual platform. To give spiritual guidance to society, one should be a saintly person. That means he should lead a very pure life. We are talking about pure devotees. Pure devotee means his life habit should be very pure. That means he should not take any food from the animal kingdom, no meat, no fish, no eggs. His mode of eating should be very pure. No illicit sex. That means a saintly person should be either completely renounced from sex life, or he should indulge in marriage, in sex life only within marriage. And that also only for the propagation of ideal children. Then a saintly person, he should also not engage in gambling or intoxication. It is ridiculous to think that someone could be a spiritual leader and at the same time be drinking alcohol or smoking tobacco. So one should lead, a spiritual leader should be very pure in his life habits, and he should be absorbed in service to God. That means his whole life should be dedicated to God. Just like a businessman eats, sleeps, all the time he's thinking, money, 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 money. So a pure devotee of Krishna, eating, sleeping all the time, he's only thinking how to serve Krishna. He has no other interest in life. Sometimes people ask us, well, what do you do for your holidays? Just like in Russia, people, they have their holiday, sometimes they go to the Black Sea, or they go to their dacha for 1 month. So what do Hare Krishna people do for a holiday? Well, actually we don't have holidays. We are all the time engaged in Krishna service. Because we don't want a holiday. Holiday means that you don't like what you're doing and therefore you get some relief. But devotees of Krishna, we don't need relief from serving Krishna. It's not that, well, I've been doing Krishna service for the last 8 months and now I need a break. Now for 2 weeks I'll go to cinemas and discos and drink vodka and smoke cigarettes, and after 2 weeks I'll come back and serve Krishna. No, a devotee, he wants more time to serve Krishna. You see, sometimes workers in the factory, they are asking, we should have our hours reduced, less time working. But devotees of Krishna, we don't want less time working. We want more hours in the day, because serving Krishna is so enjoyable. There is transcendental pleasure in that. Because by serving Krishna, we feel the mercy of Krishna. And that, it, of course, those who are not devotees, they cannot know or appreciate this. Therefore, sometimes they think that Krishna consciousness is a kind of mind control, where people are working in an unusual way. And from the materialist point of view, the devotees, they get no benefit. What is the benefit? They simply work hard all day and get no holidays. They get no pay. They get no pay, no money. And also, after working so hard, they can't even enjoy watching television or eating meat or drinking vodka. So the materialistic people, they think this is exploitation. Because they cannot understand that the devotees, what happiness they are getting from serving Krishna. And they have no interest in all these things, sports, cinema, vodka, because they have become pure. They have become detached from all this sense gratification. So actually the devotees of Krishna, they have much to contribute to human society. Human society at the present time is very deeply in darkness. So much fighting. They have United Nations. In New York there's a United Nations building. But they're united in name only. They're united in the same way that a pack of dogs are united. A group of dogs come together and bark at each other. So in the same way, they simply come, they're different representatives, and make insults at each other. And while they're talking in New York, their soldiers are shooting each other. But Krishna consciousness can give the solution for the real United Nations. Just like people, they always ask me, where am I from? But actually, from my point of view, it doesn't matter where this body is from. Because we know that this body is temporary. I am not this body. This body came into this world 38 years ago, and probably 38 years later, it will no longer be in this world. And probably after another 38 years, it will already be gone. So this particular body was born in England. But I've had so many bodies. So why should I be so attached that I'm from England? Our country was great. Now it's just talking about being great. So why should I be attached to that? Just like you see, actually most of the time I live in India. So between India and Pakistan there's always some mistrust. And on the border there's always some fighting going on. So the Indian soldier, he may be shot by a Pakistani soldier. And so when he's dying, he's thinking, oh, I hate these Pakistanis. Now, Bhagavad Gita teaches us something very interesting. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajyam tyante kalibaram tam tame vaiti kamtaya sadata bhava bhavata. Whatever you think of at the time of death, that kind of birth you get in your next life. So if someone dies thinking, I hate Pakistan, then in his next life he'll be born in Pakistan. And in his next life he'll think, oh, I hate India. So we're not very much concerned with this bodily concept of life. We are interested with the spiritual concept of life. I am not this body. You are looking at this body. And generally people judge people according to their body. Well, this body doesn't speak Russian, so he's not one of us. He's a little thin, doesn't look like he could fight very well. And so many things you may judge. He has this funny shaped head. But I would like to inform you, ladies and gentlemen, I am not this body. And you are also not that body. And if you think that you are that body, you have made a very big mistake. Shocking information. When we tell people we're not their body, this body, their heart breaks. Boom. You mean I'm not Russian? No, sir. You are eternal servant of Krishna. You are the soul within the body. This body is temporary, but you are eternal. So this knowledge should be given to human society. We can make the real United Nations. Because as long as we are thinking that we are these bodies, then we must fight like cats and dogs. You see, one dog goes into another neighborhood and all the dogs, they think, this is our neighborhood. And bro, get out, go from here. So same thing, we're thinking, this is my area, this belongs to us. Why should you fight? You're not going to live in this body very long anyway. You may say, this is my country, but how is it yours? How does it belong to you? Even if you think it belongs to you, before you were born, this country already existed. And after you die, it will continue to exist. So how can you say it is yours? Don't you understand that everything belongs to God? So if people understand this, then they can live peacefully. Not by United Nations. Or another way to get peace, it has been considered, is to kill all the enemy. That's another way to live peacefully. One way to have peace is if anyone disagrees with you, crush them. But that will also not bring peace. People have been trying to get peace in the world for hundreds and thousands of years by conquering others. It is a failure. Because even if you crush your enemies, then even within your own camp, some other people will oppose you. Like this, they'll always be fighting. So real peace can only be established if there is peace within our hearts. And peace within our hearts can only be attained when we give up the useless effort to enjoy and exploit this material world. And that can only be done when we know that we don't belong to this material world. We belong to God, we belong to Krishna. And therefore, we should act in relationship to Krishna. So it's very much needed that devotees of Krishna spread this knowledge of human society. Devotees of Krishna are the best friends of human society. Because, apart from giving this knowledge, they develop all good qualities by dint of their advancement in love of God. Devotee of Krishna, he is the best friend of all living beings.
He's among their proper position.
His heart is completely pure. No bad feeling towards anybody. No motive to exploit or cheat anybody. The devotee only thinks how to help others by giving them knowledge of Krishna. Even if he is misunderstood, he goes on with his duty. Just like Jesus Christ was misunderstood, but he went on with his duty. So we should try to seek out the association of pure devotees. And we should ourselves become pure devotees to do the best service to human society. We can become pure devotees by serving pure devotees. That will be described in the next stanza of this song, which I shall speak about tomorrow. But now I'd like to take any questions, if there are any. Does anyone have any questions?
The question is about Jesus Christ and Muhammad Raza did tell us not to eat meat.
Say in Russian, how would it be? Why did Jesus Christ and Muhammad tell us not to eat meat? Well, one reason may be that they were preaching in a place where the supplies of food may not have been so abundant. Especially Muhammad was preaching among people who lived in the desert. As far as Jesus Christ is concerned, there is much evidence that he was almost certainly vegetarian. His parents were members of the Essene sect, who were strict vegetarians. Probably the Essene sect would... Actually, they were persecuted at that time, the Essene sect. They were persecuted, harassed. Generally, whenever anyone wants to do something good, they are harassed. Now, it is said in the Bible that Jesus ate meat, or he told people, go and eat meat. It's said in the Bible that Jesus ate meat, or he told others to go and eat meat. Now, some linguistic experts have examined these words. Jesus Christ spoke in Aramaic, which was a local language, just like in Russia. Nowadays, there are so many local languages. Just like here, there must be their own local language, right? Chuvash language is there. Must be, right? They have their own local language. Yeah. So, but later, the Bible was written in Greek. Now, the Greek word for food is the same word as for meat. Just like in most Indian languages, the word for food is the same as the word for rice. Because in most areas of India, the principal food is rice. Just like in Bengali, if you ask somebody if they ate their meal, you will ask them, "Apni ki bhat khechen," which means, "Have you eaten rice?" Because it's understood that if you're going to eat, you must eat rice. So in the same way, the Greek word for food is the same as the word for meat, because the Greek people are meat eaters. So, Jesus Christ, he spoke and he said, "Give him some food." That became written in the New Testament as "Give him some meat." And that was translated into Latin and subsequently into different languages. But considering that Jesus Christ was from the Essene sect, and even more considering that he was a great devotee of God, it's very unlikely that he was actually teaching people to eat meat. Another reason is they persecuted him so much. Generally, people who are promoting meat eating in the name of religion, they become very disturbed when people promote that real religion means you shouldn't eat all these things. Any other questions?
My question was,
what in the Bible they say when people
die, they will born again in
the womb. Their
soul cannot transform in
other forms.
Okay, did you understand the question? I could not follow.
Okay, I'll say it again in English. You can repeat in Russian. Mm-hmm. She says that in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that you can be reborn as an animal, but in the Bible it says you can only be reborn as a human. So I would like to ask, where in the Bible does it say that you cannot be born as a man? Is it written there? Modern Christians, they say that. Actually, they don't even say that. They say that, what they say is that, if you believe in Jesus Christ, then you go to heaven. And if you don't, you go to hell forever. At least that's what I was taught at school. And of course, the Catholics, they say, if you're a Catholic, you go to heaven, but if you're a Protestant, you go to hell. And the Protestants say, you have to be a Protestant, if you're a Catholic, you go to hell. And among the Protestants, they say, the Baptists, they say, you have to be a Baptist, otherwise you go to hell. So everyone else is saying, everyone else is going to hell. So someone's going to hell. But the point is, there's not very clear knowledge given. Actually, this is one reason why I was dissatisfied with what I was taught in the Christian religion. I thought that, well, God is supposed to be our kind, loving Father. Now, if he sends you to hell forever, what kind of a kindness is that? Even an ordinary father, even if his son is very bad, he'll always give him another chance. But according to what I was taught at school, then if you don't, in this life, if you don't believe in Jesus, you go to hell forever. And you have to suffer terrible tortures eternally. So I thought, what kind of kind father is that? It doesn't seem very kind to me. And they say, even if you believe in Jesus, that's enough. I saw the Christian people are telling lies, and the non-Christians are telling lies. And sometimes Christian people were kind to others, and sometimes the non-Christians were kind to others. Sometimes you'd see non-Christians whose character was much better than those who were supposed to be Christians. But according to them, because the Christian went to church every week and the other man didn't, then the one who says he believes in Jesus Christ goes to heaven and the other goes to hell. Just because he has a rubber stamp, I am a Christian. And then I thought, well, some people are born in, for instance, Thailand. Some people are born in different countries such as Thailand. People who are born in Thailand, they're born in a Buddhist culture. So according to what the Christians teach, they must go to hell forever. But just because they're born in that culture, they naturally don't have faith in Christianity. Does that mean that that God, he hates the Thai people, he creates them simply to go to hell forever? All these things, they don't make any sense. If even God, we must expect him to be somewhat logical and practical. Not that he just sends people to hell forever for no reason. So it's much more reasonable to understand that we get born again and again until we get given chances again and again until we become perfect. Yeah, it's much more reasonable to understand that we get born again and again to get again and again a chance until we can finally become perfect. Get born again and again means God gives us different chances. And just for your information, the Essene sect that Jesus was born into also taught reincarnation. And the Jewish priestly class at that time, the Philistines, they very much disliked the idea of reincarnation. And in the early Christian church, vegetarianism and reincarnation were regularly taught. Later on, for political reasons, the Bible was edited and the course of Christianity changed.
It was changed and...
The whole trend of Christianity was changed.
Trends, way.
The direction. Is there any other question?
No, you all know that they are very sacred books. They are in the world. For example, in different religions, there are different books. For example, for Hindus, there is Gita.
No, Gita is not for Hindus.
No.
Where in Gita is it said that this is a book for Hindus? Krishna says, Aham Bija Pada Pita. I am the father of all living beings. Not for Hindus.
No.
This word Hindu, you won't find anywhere in the Vedic literature.
No, really, I agree with you. No, there are many sacred books. They agree with you. There are very sacred books in this world.
Yeah, many sacred books. Yeah.
How did the human society come to know about these books? I want to know how did the human society, they came to know that these books belong to this religion.
So actually religion is one. God is one, therefore religion cannot be two.
Yeah.
God is not a Christian or a Muslim or a Hindu. He wants to know how much we love him. We may go to God and say, I'm a very good Hindu or I'm a very good Muslim. But really God wants to see how much we love him, not how much we follow some external rituals. Now, the message of God has been revealed in different times, in different places, under different circumstances. Now, according to the culture and the level of development of the people, it was revealed in a different way. You have to teach according to the ability of the people to understand. Just like in the university they teach mathematics, and in the primary school they also teach mathematics. But you cannot teach university level mathematics to the child because he's not ready to understand. So in some parts of the world, the same message was taught, but in a very simplified manner. And When it is taught to people who are in a very neophyte stage of understanding, it is sometimes taught in such a way that they accept it very strongly. They are told, you have to follow this and this only. Because unless they're taught like that, they'll slip down into something very degraded. But the problem is that, the point is that they should accept that and gradually become elevated. One who becomes advanced in following any religious system, he should understand that love of God manifests in different cultures, in different settings. One, whatever religious culture one may be brought up in, a truly religious person will recognize another religious person from another culture. So, for instance, Jesus Christ was teaching in Palestine, and he was following the Jewish tradition, actually. But later, what he was teaching came to be known as Christianity. And Muhammad was also teaching. And what he taught came to be known as Islam. Because it was based around both of these religions are based around some powerful prophet of God who taught the followers according to their level of understanding. But actually, the same one. Religion is one because God is one. So we have come to talk about different religions because of our lack of understanding of the unity of religion, of the oneness of God. And usually what happens is religion becomes unified with some political forces. And then for political reasons, people want to exploit others' religious sentiments. And so instead of developing love of God, we develop religious fanaticism. But really, real religion can only be one because God is only one. So we can say that all these so-called different religions, they've come about due to cultural and historical reasons. Any other questions?
So, should we have faith to you when you say that God is person, or we should trust the Gautama Buddha or Shankara who says that God is impersonal?
Gautama Buddha never said that God is impersonal. He never spoke about God. He never said anything. Either he's personal, impersonal, anything. Yes. As far as Shankaracharya is concerned, he did teach the impersonal concept of God. But he also taught the personal concept of God. And at the end of his appearance in this world, he made the famous prayer, Bhaja Govindam. All his life he had been teaching his students to analyze the Sanskrit language and extract different meanings from it. But at the end of life he said, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Murhamate, Samprapte Sanhite Kale, Nahi Nahi Rakshati Dukrin Karane. He said that, you fools, you should simply worship Govinda Krishna. And he says that at the time of death, simply juggling words, that will not help you. And even in his writings, there are many places where Shankaracharya accepts the supremacy of Narayana. That Narayana, he is above the impersonal non-manifest. Just like in his Gita commentary, he says, Narayana Parovyaktat. Narayana is beyond the impersonal and manifest.
Beyond the
impersonal and manifest. So yes, please do trust Shankaracharya. And you don't have to trust me. Why should you trust me? But you can trust all the great acharyas. Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Vallabhacharya, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nimbaka Swami, Jiva Goswami, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. They all teach the same thing, that God is a person and we should surrender to Him. Any other questions?
He can say a big list of persons who say that God is impersonal.
So say
Ramakrishna.
Ramakrishna is not accepted by any bona fide acharya. He was eating cow's meat. How can he be an acharya?
Ramakrishna.
He also wasn't. He wasn't following any strict Vedic sampradaya. If you don't follow any strict sampradaya, you can imagine whatever you like, but you won't be accepted as an acharya. Yeah. Do you want to be a follower of Shankaracharya? If you want to be a follower of Shankaracharya, you have to wait to be born in an Indian Brahmin family. Then you can take sannyas.
Yeah.
Because Shankaracharya didn't accept any followers unless they took sannyas. And he didn't give sannyas to anyone unless they were born in a Brahmana family. And those who are strictly following the Shankara Sampradaya, they won't even speak to anyone except in Sanskrit. So even if you want to follow Shankaracharya, you can't. Not in this lifetime, anyway. But if you really want to follow Shankaracharya, then you should chant Hare Krishna as he says, Bhaja Govinda. Vajana Maharshi, he's not following Shankaracharya. Not all the people, he says, they're not following. Ramakrishna is eating meat and fish. Shankaracharya would never agree to such a thing.
There are some others.
Some others, what do you want? Do you want simply quote a list of names or do you want spiritual perfection? That's exactly what Shankaracharya said not to do. Nahi nahi rakshati dukrin karana. He says simply by arguing and juggling words, you can't understand the perfection of God. Or even when you take the acharyas, why don't you take the greatest acharya of all, Sri Krishna? You need to learn, you don't know. You're quoting Buddha as saying he was saying Buddha is there as an impersonal God. That means you don't know the first thing about Buddhism because Buddha never took that. So instead of thinking that you're very clever by sitting in Russia and reading a few books and not following anything, you should become a disciple of someone who knows. Any other question? I'll take one more question because we have to finish at 8 o'clock.
The question is that Krishna appeared in this material world 5,000 years ago, and what was with him before this appearance?
Well, the creation is going on eternally.
I mean, where is Krishna?
Where was Krishna? Krishna is eternally existing in Goloka Vrindavan, which is his eternal planet. And he also comes to this material world. When he comes to this material world, he simultaneously remains in his own planet, which is beyond this material creation. So it's not that Krishna is born like us. Ajopi san adhyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san prakritim swamadhishtaya sambhalami atmamaya. Krishna says, I am unborn and my eternal body is ever existing. And I appear in this material world from time to time by my own energy. Krishna doesn't appear like us, forced by our karma to take different bodies. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he has an eternal transcendental form. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Lord Brahma, he says that the supreme controller is Krishna. He has an eternal, blissful, transcendental form. He is the origin of everything and the cause of all causes. Now, Krishna appeared in this world 5,000 years ago, but Krishna was known even before that. He was worshipped by people even before his appearance, because knowledge of him is given in the Vedas. So many people were worshipping him even millions of years before his appearance. Just like we see in the Bhagavatam, it's described Prahlad Maharaj some millions of years ago. He is saying, Matiyena Krishne, he is speaking about Krishna. So we have to finish because we have to leave this hall at 8 o'clock. Yeah, so we'll distribute prasad. We'll distribute prasad now.
But you can start now to distribute and maybe you can...
No, I'll distribute prasad.
Ah, you?
Yeah.